Welcome to the podcast. I'm Larry Matthews. This is another in a series of podcasts recorded at the 3C Conference, Creatures, Crimes, and Creativity. The conference was held in Hunt Valley, Maryland, near Baltimore. It featured dozens of writers. The 3C Conference was organized by Intrigue Publishing. One of the speakers and panelists was John Gilstrap. John's a best-selling author of 10 thrillers. He's been translated into 20 languages, and he has adapted 4 best-selling novels for movies.
The first thing I'd like to do is maybe get you to tell me, how did you get into writing? How did you even start this?
Writing is the only thing I've ever been good at, and communication in general. And when I was, my earliest memories, I've never been an athlete. I would be the kid in elementary school who would be writing stories for fun off on the side, and became editor of the high school newspaper. I was, you know, the creative writing journals, and that's all I've really been good at. And even now, I mean, I call my big boy job, my day job, it's all communications. I make speeches and I write articles and try to change policy, but communication has always been my thing.
So you write your first book, and it immediately is widely accepted, or not?
No, it was. My first book knocked it out of the park. Nathan's Run in 1990, well, I wrote it in 94, came out in 96. It was a huge seller. It was all the talk of the town of New York. It did really well. It was actually sort of a dizzying way to start a career, because you suddenly find myself in the major leagues without having spent a day in the minors, and it was sort of discombobulating.
But it wasn't easy getting it printed.
It wasn't. I was rejected 27 times, and when I finally found an agent on the 28th try, she sold it very, very quickly. It sold within a week. Once I found the agent and the agent got behind it, it went very quickly. And then it sold internationally in 23 other countries and movie rights and all of that. It was just a very heady way to start a career.
So it's kind of like winning the lottery. And what do you attribute that to? And I ask this of every widely and wildly successful author I talk to. So what's the difference between you and somebody else who's out there going, my goodness, this isn't going anywhere?
Well, for me at that point, particularly first time out, it's largely luck. Although I did do the research, and I knew I wanted a particular agent because I knew that she had a sales record that was enviable, and I thought I had a very special book at the time. Of course, every author thinks that they have a very special book, and I understand that. And then the stars aligned. So I don't know how much of that I could possibly have engineered beyond doing the research up front and knowing that I wanted this agent. And actually, in one case, knowing that I didn't want an agent who had said yes to me. So I actually turned an agent down in that 27 rejection thing.
So why would you do that?
Because I didn't think he was strong enough to get me what I wanted out of it.
Okay. So you kind of knew where you wanted this to go.
I knew I wanted to make real money. Yeah. I didn't have any idea what the actual number would be, but I knew that I wanted to be successful. I didn't want to get lost in the shuffle of new authors trying to find their voice. And I happened to find, I didn't find it, my agent found a publishing house, HarperCollins, that really got behind it. They spent a lot of money on advertising and full page ad in the New York Times, that sort of marketing push. And it worked. And now suddenly, you know, I've found myself in this new arena.
So as you're doing your research and you're putting this book together, you must have had an idea of what you thought a good and successful book was.
Yes. I thought, we're talking about Nathan's Run, which tells the story of a 12-year-old boy who kills a juvenile detention center guard and runs away. And it started with the idea of a good guy, in this case it turned out to be a cop, who had to choose between doing his job and doing the right thing. And I wanted it to be a binary choice. And then I happened to stumble upon this juvenile detention stuff. I think it's a travesty, the way that's a whole different topic. But children are children until they're 18. So in any given juvenile detention center, at least back then, you'd have 11, 12-year-olds in the same space as 18-year-old. You know, you get the predators and, you know, all of this. And I thought about how terrifying that was. So basically, I knew I wanted to tell a story that had sort of an interesting moral dilemma in it. And I wanted it to be an emotional ride for the audience. And I kept flogging the manuscript until I got that. and I'm very proud of it. And I knew at the time, the big concern for me at the time was I wasn't sure that I could ever repeat it. You know, it was a very special kind of project, and especially throw in the success that it had commercially, that was daunting stuff, but very special.
So now you're into military special operations and hostage rescue and that kind of thing, and you spend a lot of time with special ops people. How did you get into that world? How did you get them to talk to you?
Well, I stumbled into that world, actually. At a time, there was a fellow named Kurt Muse who was arrested by Manuel Noriega in 1989. Actually, he was arrested in 88, rescued in 1989. And here's a story of a guy who, on his American expat, living on the economy in Panama, whose friends were being murdered by Noriega, and he was sick of it. So he started a radio network to bring Noriega down and became public enemy number one. And ultimately, he was betrayed and arrested. And on the night he was arrested, his family, his daughter and son, she was 15 and he was 12, they had to flee the country by themselves to get out while he was being arrested. Mom was tending to a sick relative in Florida. So for me, I looked at it, this was had all of the elements of the kind of thriller that I write, the family elements and frankly, Kids in Jeopardy and all that. And then you throw in the fact that it was Delta Force's most successful mission at that point when I wrote it in history. So I got an introduction to the community as sort of a friend of the community. First, I had meetings with General Scowcroft, who was the National Security Advisor, who then gave the okay for me to meet with President Bush, 41, and I spoke with him for about an hour and a half about it. And after that meeting, suddenly people started talking to me, and they've become very dear friends.
So,
not the Bushes, but the...
Well, the big question would be, how did you get to Scowcroft, who then got you to Bush?
Via Kurt Muse, the guy who was rescued.
Okay.
So he made the appropriate phone calls and vouched for me. So there was a lot of trust that went into this. A lot of folks went out on a limb to trust me with, you know, to tell the truth and tell, you know, not have an angle. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that I lived up to that. It was a very proud moment.
You also did a lot of research, and you were willing to start at the bottom and kind of work your way up.
Right.
So well, you didn't call the White House and say, I'd like to talk to the president about
it. It didn't occur to me to try. That probably might have been the easiest way. But no, that just didn't seem reasonable to me. I interviewed the Delta operators who were on the mission when they finally started to talk to me, some of the State Department folks who worked behind the scenes, Kurt's compatriots. He did not work alone. He had co-conspirators whom he never betrayed, despite really terrible efforts to get him to do so. So it worked out to be this fabulous research project that took 4 years. That's the downside. Mm-hmm. Way longer than any book I've ever written before. Mm-hmm. And there comes a point in that you think, God, is this ever going to get done? It's that, well, you're a journalist, so you know there's that key element of information that's going to tie it all together, and no one would talk to me.
Right.
And then finally they did, and it was a great moment.
So that kind of gets us to how do you put your books together? I mean, that was an idea. You followed through, you did your research, you wrote the book. For your next book, how do you approach that? Do you do the same? Do you kind of sit around and say, well, what if this happened and then that could happen? Or do you base it on real events and you work from them?
I don't do nonfiction anymore, and I don't do politics. And I actually don't do military stuff either. I mean, Jonathan Grave, my character, happens to be former military, but he doesn't do military operations, not military scale. It normally starts with a big what if. In Threat Warning, which was several books ago, it was about domestic terrorism and how easy I thought it would be for a group of zealots to disguise themselves as Arab extremists to draw attention away from what their plot really was. And that was the nugget of a thought, and then I built story around that. Mm-hmm. And in the case of High Treason, which just came out, it's the thought of the first family, or elements of the first family, routinely go on what are called OTR, off the record visits to restaurants or mm-hmm. whatever. So I created a first lady who's a party girl, and she's out at 2 a.m. and with a disguise, and you know, not another fanfare, but she's got her Secret Service team, and she's kidnapped. And I thought, well, what a what a cool premise. Yeah. And it's just a matter of justifying it from there and making the story work. So for me, it always starts with a premise, kind of a cool premise.
So on these books, how long does it take you to write a book from when you're sitting around thinking, well, what if the first lady is kidnapped to when you're finished with it?
It's hard to know when to start that clock because I have to deliver the next book in 2 weeks. And that's a year after I delivered the previous one. But I'm already starting to think about the next one. So I'm not sure where that clock starts. Officially, it takes me a year.
Okay.
But the writing, the actual grinding out the pages, probably 7 months.
A couple of writers I've talked to who are kind of in your spot have their deals where they're required to deliver a book on a schedule, and some of them chafe at that. How do you feel about that?
Hey, I got a contract in the entertainment industry. I think that's great. that's the deal, you know. And I've written on spec before, and I find that much more stressful because you don't know if it's going to be there. But as it is now, with in fact, I just signed a 2-book contract with Kensington to extend the Jonathan Graves series, which then makes the sales force happier because they know that, you know, they've got a longer time to develop me as an author and Jonathan Graves as a character. So I think everybody gets a sense of peace. You know, we're all in a team, and this is all working together. And now when new contract negotiation time comes up, everybody gets a little tense because we're not sure, you know, if it's going to work out, or the money's going to be right, or the other terms and conditions are going to be right. And there's this palpable sense of, when you finally get it worked out. So I have no problems at all working to deadline.
John, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.